Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of the Nothing to Boo With You podcast with me, your host, Clodagh. As you guys who are familiar with the podcast know, this is a space that gives whispers a voice, mentions the unmentionable, and brings all things inwards, outwards. It's been a few weeks since I put up an episode, and I have myself to blame. I had Kira on because the return of the Mac was coming on, because she's still the most listened to episode from season one. So she was coming back and we had a great episode recorded, only to discover she had fumbled with her microphone and unfortunately fucked up the episode. So we have to re-record. And in the meantime, there's been a few bits going on with life that has had me very busy. So I had to park recording for a week or two. But look, c'est la vie, life, I think, sometimes throws things your way and curveballs for a reason. And everything we go through in our daily life, there's always a purpose for it. There's always a reason behind it. So we take the highs with the highs, the lows with the lows, and we keep on keeping on. In terms of, you know, I like to update you guys about myself and my relationship with anxiety. It's been doing fantastic. I have had zero panic attacks in months now, which is incredible. And I put that down to giving myself a pat on the back for really working hard on myself mentally and physically and being more self-aware than I've ever been in my life. And I will have times where I will tumble. I will have times where I will have high anxiety, but I keep preaching it. Exposure therapy and willful tolerance, they are my two new best friends. So I'm so blessed that I've come to that stage in my journey with anxiety that I can feel that. And as I always say, if you or anyone listening or watching this podcast, you know, is struggling with your anxiety, I'm not an expert, I'm not a professional, but I'm an expert in my own journey with anxiety. So please always feel free to give me a shout by email or by Instagram. And I always reply to DMs. So anyway, moving on from that, I suppose one of the wonderful things about having a podcast and a place like this is getting the opportunity to bring on people from all walks of life, people I've never met before, people I've met at occasions, people I've come across on Instagram, and then there's others that I'm actually just blessed to know and have in my life already, which leads me to this lady that I'm being joined by tonight. This is Nikki. You guys, some of you might recognize her from her time in the council, or probably more recently and more obviously, it would be from Macara Animal Rescue. I will get on to that later, because what this lady does and that rescue center is literally a godsend for all our little fur babies. And I myself personally can thank her for giving me my little Simba. I don't know what I'd do without him. He's my baby. He's 10. Can you believe this?
No, I can't believe that, Clodagh.
So anyway, I'm going to introduce Nikki properly anyway, and we're going to have a little chat. Nikki, over the last 4 years, has had a remarkable journey and a tough journey, which included the sudden loss of her husband, Andy, and medical complications that she's had herself following on from that. The grief, the navigation of life after grief, and her coping skills, her resilience. And her story, I think you'll find, is very relatable. It's very touching. And I think there's not one person out there that won't get it and applaud her for her resilience. So, Nikki, thanks a million for coming on the show.
Yeah, welcome, Clodagh. It's been a long time in the making. I think when you first started the podcast, we talked about recording.
We did.
And that was 2 years ago,
yeah,
in the early days.
When I was starting to set it all up. Yeah.
And so
then I had my speed wobble. You know, I went and had a nervous breakdown. Like, such a fucking dramatic bitch, like, you know.
I know, well, yeah, you know, there's only one Chloe in our lives. There's only one Chloe. And amazing. And for those people that don't know Clodagh personally, there's a huge age gap between us. In fact, I'm old enough to be Clodagh's mom, but I class Clodagh as one of my closest friends. And this lady here is an inspiration, and she's an amazing woman. So
back at you.
Yeah.
Back at you. This beyond proud to have this woman in my life and beyond blessed. We won't get emotional.
No, we won't.
Not yet. Let's not start. We haven't even properly introduced you yet.
No.
So, Nikki, look, that's the formal part of it over. As you know, this podcast is a really safe space. So it's like me and you just sitting down having one of the many chats we've had over the years. I mean, I know you over 20 years now. That's
amazing. It's unreal, really. Yeah, it's 22, 23 years. Yeah,
all those years ago when I was a waitress, I was 18.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. Gosh, that was only 10 years ago.
And I was your age, Claudia. I was 40.
Shit.
Don't mention the age. Oh, my God, that's scary. That's scary shit. God. Really bad. Really bad.
Because you look so old to me. Shit, that's me now. So, Nikki, come here. Look, I would like to spend a bit of time maybe towards the end of it. We might talk a little bit about the doggos and that. But I suppose specifically why I really wanted to get you on is to just tell us a little bit about what went on the last 4 years in your life, because it was a fucking struggle.
It has. I've always been a really upbeat and positive person. And, you know, moving to Ireland 20 odd years ago was the start of a new life for myself and my husband, Andy.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm actually from Irish extraction. So coming to Ireland for me was like coming home. But for Andy, it was a big deal. He was given a job opportunity. You know, we were both second time married. We moved over here and we built an amazing life together. You know, we bought a house and Andy loved his garden and we traveled. We did lots of things. Andy, as a person, was an amazing husband. He did have his demons, and one of his demons was alcoholism, which not a lot of people know. Andy was what they would class a functioning alcoholic. So he held down a job, he went to work, but when he was at home, he drank. So over the course of the last sort of 14, 15 years, the drinking, I wouldn't say it had increased, but it did have an impact on our relationship, and it had a massive impact on me as well. When I look back now, I can actually see the impact that it had on me. I'd always been quite a heavy person, but I started piling on the weight because I wasn't doing things. I wasn't exercising. I went through a phase of drinking with him.
Of course.
Which, you know, there is an old adage, if you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah.
And so I did, and, you know, I'm not proud of that, but I don't mind telling people.
I can totally relate to that.
I went through that phase, you know, and we'd go most nights of the week through two or three bottles of wine. And at the time I was smoking, so it'd be two or three bottles of wine, maybe 40 fags.
And it's easy to get into that. But I know an ex-partner of mine was a functioning alcoholic, and I didn't even know what that word meant. And before I knew it, I was drinking every night.
Yeah.
And I also had anxiety in the background, and this was a brilliant fucking cheap therapy for me. But sure, in the long run, it was, you know, it wasn't sustainable,
it
was detrimental to my mental and physical health. Thankfully, I saw sense and dumped his ass after about 8 months. But anyway, that's another story.
That's, you know, I mean, I'd been married to Andy, marriage, loved him.
Andy was a gentleman.
He was, and anybody that knew Andy, there were lots of people that didn't know he drank.
I never knew.
Yeah. Andy was an absolute, he was a functioning alcoholic. And I think the thing that brought it to a head was one night, at this stage, we were in separate bedrooms. And I'd gone to the bathroom and I came back and Andy was on the floor in our dining room in a pool of blood.
Oh my God.
He'd hit his head on the open plan staircase, and it brought it home to me that night that it was, hey, do you know, I need to keep my wits about me. And because I knew Andy wasn't capable of stopping drinking.
Okay.
So Andy was a very private person, and I begged him to go for counselling and I begged him to go and talk to people. But Andy was really old school. And I think there probably will be people of a certain age that will relate to this, Clodagh. Andy was like, you don't wash your dirty linen in public. You know, it's nobody's business. I'll deal with it myself. And it was quite obvious he needed help.
Yeah.
I was fortunate. I was able to rally myself really quickly. I'm a really strong person.
That's an understatement.
And I just, the day, that morning, I woke up and I went, that's it, no more. And I stopped drinking.
Okay.
And that was probably, it was probably in about 2010, 11, 12, something like that.
Okay.
So move forward to 2015. Andy's still drinking quite heavy. But then, as you know, he was working in the mine. Yeah. Redundancy came.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And with redundancy came lots of uncertainty. Thankfully, we were in a position where the redundancy that Andy got, I was able to convince him to pay the mortgage, because Andy's attitude was, oh, well, I'll take a few months off and then maybe August, September, I'll look for another job. He was a qualified electrician. He wouldn't have had a problem getting another job.
Of course, yeah.
However, I knew with his addiction that that wasn't the case. So we paid the mortgage off and we paid back any credit cards and stuff that we had. And thankfully, thankfully we did, because in August 2016, Andy was admitted to Clonmel Hospital with multiple organ failure due to alcoholism. Oh, just briefly, he spent 7 weeks there. We weren't sure he was coming home. His children and my children came over to say goodbye. I think the catalyst for Andy was realising when the solicitor went in with a piece of paper and said, you've not made a will.
You're joking. No. Into the hospital.
We have no choice. Like, the doctors called me in and said, look, you know, we don't think Andy's going to come out of here. There's only one way he's going to come out, if he doesn't start responding.
Oh, gosh.
And at the time, Andy had no will made. So my daughter, Kelly, who was, you know, she was as close to Andy as anybody was, closer than his own children.
Yeah.
Sort of said to Andy, look, Irish laws are different to English laws. Andy, if anything ever happened to you, what about Mum? And he said, you know, get the solicitor in. So I think waking up one morning and seeing Neil Butler at the side of his bed with a piece of paper.
Yeah.
It was an eye-opener for him. And,
was it?
It was. It was. Two or three days later, we were able to take him into Cashel in a wheelchair because he couldn't walk.
Wow.
And then within sort of like a fortnight, 3 weeks, he was home.
So went from pretty much on death's door.
Yeah.
To
rallying. And again, I think with my own experiences and my own journey, a lot of healing and a lot of being able to move forward is mental. You know, it's...
Preach.
It's what goes on up here. Anybody can sort of feel sorry for themselves and give up, if you like.
Yeah.
And I don't come from that sort of family. And I just think Andy just needed that push. But anyway, that was the story. So 4 years, move forward 4 years.
Life was good.
Life was good. I decided at the time I was 25 stone. So I decided, hey, I need to do a little bit of something here. I've never been skinny, skinny mini. Never want to be skinny, skinny mini. No. But I was always healthy.
Want to be healthy, yeah.
Yeah, and even at...
And you're so active. As long as I know you, you're so active.
But
so.
Even at 25 stone, you know, I was still very active.
Completely.
But I was not happy with myself.
Of course.
So, you know, I'd started to lose a bit of weight. My daughter got married and it was an amazing day in 2018. Andy gave her away. He was so, so proud. But the day of the wedding, I was adjusting his shirt and I noticed he'd got a lump on either side of his neck.
And
on the day of the wedding. And I said to him, Andy, what, you know, how long have you had these? And he was like, oh, it's nothing, it's nothing. So we had the wedding, we came home and I noticed these lumps getting a little bit bigger. And again, typical man, oh, it's nothing, it's nothing.
It's terrible that we say it so flippantly, typical man.
But it's true. Yeah, it's nothing, it's nothing.
Yeah.
So one day we had a conversation and I got a little tiny mole just here. And I said to him, Andy, please, would you go to the doctor with those? And he said, oh, you know, because I was smoking. He was like, oh, you're putting them cancer sticks in your mouth and look at that mole. And so I did a deal with him.
Deflecting.
Yeah. So I made a deal. I said, look, I'll go about this mole if you come with me and let her look at your neck. So it was an agreement was made. So, of course.
It's like negotiating with a child.
I was,
I feel that with my husband too. Like, did you get your bloods checked? No. But will you please get them done? I'll get mine done if you get your... Oh, my God.
No.
It's like having children sometimes.
Oh, it is. And the older they get, Chloe, I'm sorry, I have to tell you this, the older they get, the worse.
Girl, I'm seeing it. Like, what's that grumpy old man? Do you remember that?
Victor Meldrew. Yeah. That was Andy's nickname, Victor. Yeah, that was Andy's nickname.
I love you, Connor, but you're kind of... Heading
that way.
Yeah.
But that was Andy's nickname, Victor. Yeah.
Go away.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Connor,
yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Victor. So, yeah, so anyway, we went and that was probably... Kelly got married on the 18th, on the 5th of May, sorry. So it's probably mid-May.
Yeah.
So in the August, he was diagnosed with cancer. Well, the diagnosis, it wasn't a straight-off diagnosis. It went on for about 6 months.
Yeah.
And following into 2019, the actual diagnosis came that he'd got this rare form of cancer. It was can't remember, it's gone off the top of my head now, but it was actually a rare form of a lymphoma that he got. So he started his treatment and
did that involve removing the lungs?
No, they couldn't remove any of them. It was in all his lymph nodes. So they decided to give him a course of chemo, which the first course he flew through it, there was no problem. And in February 2020, it was just before we were locked down for the pandemic, actually. So in February 2020, he'd gone to the doctors. We'd been to the hospital and the consultant said, I'm so pleased to tell you that there's not a sign of the cancer anywhere.
Whoa.
And we were like, oh my, we couldn't believe it. It was like a miracle. It was just, we couldn't actually believe it. Like we'd read, like you do, you've got Dr. Google and you read. And
I hate that we do it, but we do. It's human nature. Yeah.
So we had a house in Spain at the time and we wanted to sell it. So we'd lost quite a few sales with Andy being sick. So what we decided to do then was hop on a plane, have a holiday, because we'd had an offer on the house, go over, clear the house, sell the house.
Go away.
So we did. We had an amazing 2 weeks. We managed to sell the house and we landed back in Dublin on the 12th, as they locked us down on the 13th of March.
Stop.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You were lucky.
We were in Spain and I was sending.
Were you lucky though? Would you have been lucky being locked down in Spain?
No. Well, I was sending everybody pictures of toilet rolls and saying, I'm bringing you all back a toilet roll or a bottle of hand sanitizer because you know it was all gone off the shelves.
Because COVID was starting to really. Yeah. Wow.
So we got back anyway, and again, like that, a couple of weeks later, it was actually while we were in Spain, I was adjusting, Andy was a divil for not putting his collar out right, and I saw a lump on the back of his neck, and I didn't want to say anything to him.
Yeah.
So we got back, and we'd been home about a week, I think, and he, as I say, we were in separate rooms, so he came down the stairs, and he said to me, I need to get hold of the consultant. He said, I've got a lump come up on my leg.
And he said it to you?
Yeah, he came down and he said, I've got a lump come up on my leg. And he'd also got three lumps in his breast.
How long had he been in remission at this stage?
About 3 weeks.
Shit.
So we, say about a month, say. So we got back hold of the consultant and went back to, he was being treated in the Whitfield because obviously COVID was rife at the time, and all the cancer from Waterford, they were actually building the new cancer unit there, and everything was going to the Whitfield Clinic. So Andy was in and out of hospital. He spent time in Clonmel. His blood pressure kept dropping, and yeah, he was backwards and forwards.
And COVID was in, so how, like, obviously I know, but like, just for viewers and listeners, like, how restricted were you with visits?
Very.
It was
actually, it upsets me now even to think about it. I was taking him clothes and Andy had a real sweet tooth, so I'd be taking him all his goodies in. But it would be a case of handing the bag over at the door. And they always, in fairness to the hospital, they put him in a ward, in a room that was near where there was a window to the...
I remember the pictures. Yeah.
And he talked to me on the phone through the window. So yeah, it was very restricted, and he was in and out. He'd perhaps do a week at home, and then he'd go downhill again, and he'd be back in the hospital. And in, we'll say it was the end of July 2020, he really wasn't eating, and he had to go back into hospital. By this time, the new unit in Waterford was open.
Okay.
And they took him back in. He was painfully thin. He couldn't keep anything down.
And were they giving you any notion as to, like, was this curable? Was there something that could be done?
They'd actually, Andy, in fairness to Andy, Andy never gave up all the way through. He was always like, I'm going to fight this.
Really?
Yeah, all the way through. Andy protected me. Literally all the way through, he was like, no, you know, I'm going to outlive you. And but the consultant had told me that because of the damage to his organs from
the failure,
the alcoholism, that he couldn't stand the chemo, so they had to stop the chemo towards the end. So the last week of July, he went into hospital, and the first week he was fine. The second week, he took a really bad turn. And what a lot of people didn't know, I was really fortunate. Andy's daughter, Emma, is a solicitor in the UK.
Okay.
And I needed to get in to see Andy. I knew I could make at least get him to eat something. Emma is actually what they refer to as an ambulance chasing solicitor, but she deals with medical negligence in the UK.
Okay.
So she was a brilliant help. She got onto the hospital, and what nobody realised at the time is that they did have a policy for visiting for patients that were terminally ill that didn't have COVID, that were COVID negative.
Okay.
So they, I've got to get this time frame right, on the Saturday, they let me in to see Andy. And he was fine. He was Andy. We were laughing and joking.
He was coherent.
He was just my Andy, but very, very skinny. And I took him loads of his favourite stuff. He wouldn't eat anything. Okay. He was just like, no, I can't swallow. And he tried to eat a bit of chocolate. But he was painfully thin. I mean, this was a man that was always in and around 13 and a half, 14 stone.
He wasn't a skinny man.
No. So that was on the Saturday, and I'd said to him Saturday night, there was something happening with the rescue, and as we'll go on to the rescue later, Andy was he started the rescue with me. You know, he worked and did a lot of the building and stuff. There was something happening with the rescue, and I said to him, look, I'm not going to come in tomorrow, but I'll be back on Monday. And he said, yeah, that's fine. I said, but we'll talk on the phone and video call and stuff. And he said, okay then. So I spoke to him on the Sunday, and he seemed fine. I went back in on the Monday, and I knew there was something not right.
Yeah.
My daughter had actually phoned me when I was on my way down, and she said, Mum, I've just had the weirdest conversation with Andy. And I said, what? She said, he said that they're moving him because he's got COVID. And I was like, right, okay. So I rang the ward on the way down and said, I'm on my way down. Are you moving him? Has he got COVID? She said, no, they went into his room and he was out of bed and he'd got all his stuff packed and he was convinced that he'd got COVID and he'd got to move.
Oh.
But unbeknownst to me, he'd been complaining of pain and they'd started him on some morphine. So it was
delirium.
Yeah, it was the medication that was making him hallucinate. So when I got down there on the Monday, we had great little chats. I mean, some of it was, you know, we were laughing. Some of it, he was like a child. He was asking me to take him to an air show, and then he'd be coherent again, you know. And so that was Monday. Tuesday, I went down, and there was an awful change in him, and he was very quiet and subdued. He was still talking. And he was still quite coherent, but he kept saying to me, he always called me babe. So, you know, he kept saying, I'm quite coherent, babe. I'm quite tired, babe. And I don't want you sitting there. You ought to go home. And then the next breath, he'd go on about racing cars or something, you know.
In and out.
Yeah, in and out. So, again, Wednesday, he was the very same, but I knew he wasn't right. I knew. And I'd said to them, do I need to speak to the consultant? They said, no, you know, we'll just keep doing what we're doing. And he'd been pulling out his catheters out his arm, and they put them in his leg. And
oh, gosh.
At this stage, he was incontinent. So, you know, and in the coherent moments, and this is an awful thing to look at, when somebody is coherent, especially a proud person, Andy was a very proud man, and they know that they've got a nappy on and they're pulling up the bed. Sorry, I'm getting upset, but they're pulling up the bed clothes because they know. And it was hard. And it's hard to stay positive, you know, it's hard.
Yes, it is.
So Wednesday came and went. Thursday, I was on my way down and I got a call from the hospital to say that Andy had taken a turn for the worse.
You were on your way already.
I was on my way, and the consultant wanted to see me when I got down there. So I got in, and the consultant, who I will say was an amazing guy, Dr. El Hasidi, he was amazing. He was actually in the room with Andy, and he said to me, look, Andy's taken a turn for the worst. And I asked him to step outside because I didn't know how coherent Andy was. Could he hear people, you know? But to me, Andy looked like he'd had a stroke. His hands were all twisted up high, and he was awake but not awake, you know, and I couldn't understand him, he couldn't speak, and
a massive.
Oh, it was awful. It was awful.
Okay.
So the consultant said to me, look, Andy was very sore to the touch because I got hold of his hand and I said, I'm just going to go outside with the doctor. And he was like, you know, I knew he was uncomfortable. And the doctor, we went outside, and the doctor said to me, look, Andy's cancer's not behaved how we thought it would. We think it's gone into his brain. And I just said, look, it doesn't take a doctor to know that
it's gone to his brain. Yeah.
And he said, we'd like to give him a CAT scan to see where we're at with the cancer. And I just took one look at him and I said, is your CAT scan going to save my husband? And he said, no, it's not. And I said, well, sorry, but you're not doing it. I said, he's in terrible pain. He's non-coherent. He's not eaten for 10 days.
Yeah.
So I just asked them, I said, what I want you to do now, the stuff that you're pumping into him that's keeping him alive, I want you to stop. I want you to let him go with some dignity and let him go at peace because he's in pain. And I said, you can do any number of tests you want on him after he's gone, wherever he's going to go to, but I want you to make whatever time he's got now comfortable. And that's what they did. They got the nurse down and they removed. He was wired up to the nines. People might find this harrowing to listen to, but he was not going to get better, Clodagh. And to watch somebody like that is somebody who you love and who's loved you is actually horrific.
I can't even put into words.
It's horrific. So people, you know, I wanted him to die with some amount of dignity. I didn't want him to be kept alive. They said he would have only have survived maybe another 4 or 5 days. Pooing himself, weeing himself in a nappy with bed sores, that is not dignified.
No.
So they removed everything anyway, and the doctor said to me, look, it will be, whereas we probably would have given him another 4 days, it's only going to be 48 hours. And I said, that's fine. So I stayed with him as long as I could. I went home, and the following morning at 4:30, I was awake on the side of the bed, and I was like, something had woken me up. I did something I never do. I went into the kitchen, I made myself a cup of tea and went back into the bedroom with it. I'd no sooner parked my bum on the side of the bed than the phone rang and it was the hospital. And they said, we need you to come. So I drove like the hammers of hell.
On your own?
On my own. And I was talking to him all the way down there. I'm a big believer in lots of things. And I do believe Andy knew I was coming. And I kept saying to him, wait for me, wait for me. I'm on my way down, wait for me. I got down there at 6:30. And he passed away in my arms at 8:30. But do you know what? It was so peaceful. I held his hand and he opened his eyes and he smiled at me through his eyes. And he gripped. It was the first time in 2 weeks I felt a grip on my hand as enough to say thank you. And one of the things Andy said to me on the Sunday before was, I told you earlier, he'd never, ever given up, ever. And I'd said to him, I'm getting the downstairs bedroom ready for when you come home. He sat me on the bed, he held my hand, and he said to me, I'm not coming home like this, babe. Remember, you'll always be my sunshine, and promise me you'll be happy. And unbeknownst to me, that Sunday night, he phoned his friend Martin, and he said to Martin, I want you to make me a promise. And Martin said, what's that, mate? He said, I want you to look after my Nick when I'm gone. And that was the only time he'd admitted defeat to anybody. Cool. And it was at his funeral that Martin told me that.
I was just going to ask, when did you know?
Martin told me that at his funeral, yeah. So there, yeah, that's the sad bit over. You know, it was a really difficult time.
How did those few days and weeks feel after?
Grief is, everybody deals with grief differently.
Yeah.
And I look back now. Sorry about the tears.
And I've no tissue.
That's fine, all right.
Worst ever.
I look back now and there are some things I regret. I'd said to everybody, I didn't cry an awful lot. And I'd said to everybody, you know, I've done my grieving because he'd been sick for so long. And my way of dealing with things was like, decorate.
Yeah. I get that.
Do you know, get busy. I sorted all his clothes out, all his clothes that he never wore, and they went to a great cause. They didn't even come to my charity shop. Where his clothes went were to a home, an old people's home, an older people's home, and they went to men that didn't have family.
Oh, that's
so. So even like he'd got brand new pairs of socks and trousers, and so. That's where they went. They went to people that didn't have family.
Yeah.
And I just did a lot of sorting and moving. And that was, you know, some people leave things as they are.
Yeah.
My way
of... Almost like a shrine.
Yeah. My way of dealing with it was the total opposite.
Clear out.
And even my own daughter was saying to me, God, Mum, you know, slow down a bit, slow down.
But were you doing this quite soon after?
I was, yeah. It was, I don't know, like the worst part for me, even though I'd got all my friends around me and great neighbours and everything,
yeah,
it was going home at night time to an empty house. I mean, I'd been with Andy 25 years. You know,
and all of a sudden you were living alone.
And all of a sudden I was on my own. And I've not got a big house, you know that, yeah. But there was nobody there. And despite anything, we had such a close bond. Even through all his alcoholism, we liked the same things. We had a great crack, you know.
You were partners.
Yeah, we were
best friends.
It took us a long time. Andy used to say to me, when we first got together, he used to say to me, because there was 9 years of an age difference between us. I was his young bit.
Obviously.
And he used to say to me, oh, God, where were you when I first started courting? And I'd go, oh, I'm still playing with my dollies, you know. Because Andy and I, like, the story of Andy and I meeting is a whole new other episode, Clodagh. Oh, okay. But it was so, like, we've been through so much together, you know.
It was second time lucky for both of us.
It was. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And that is a whole new thing. There is hope out there. Well, is the hope out there? I'm beginning to wonder at this stage
of
my life.
There is.
So that was, you know, Andy passed away and my dealing with grief was...
You had already started the weight loss process.
I had, yeah. But I really threw myself into it. And my dealing with it was... I'd been a part of a couple for 25 years. It was Andy and Nikki.
Yeah.
Nikki and Andy.
Yeah.
And I'd lost my individuality.
Yeah, I get that.
My identity.
Yeah.
You know, when I met Andy, I was 30-odd-year-old party girl. You know, I'd gone through a messy divorce and
yeah.
I'd got three kids, but they're in school. And, you know, it was, I'd like I say, I'd always had a weight problem, but I was never as heavy as I had been.
Yeah.
And my confidence was really knocked. And again, that's something I've never really lacked, is no. confidence.
No, she has not. I can attest to that.
But, you know, when you're on your own, and you look at yourself in the mirror and you go, oh, by this time I was probably about 18 stone. I'd dropped to got 6 or 7 stone.
That's
and
incredible.
I was probably about 18 stone and I was looking myself in the mirror and I'm going, yeah. I just think like everybody wants to be loved and I'd lost the love of my life and I'm there looking at myself.
Massive void.
I'm looking at myself going, is anybody ever going to love me again like Andy? Andy, nobody would love me like Andy loved me because I'll never find that again in anybody.
No.
But I was judging myself and going, oh, you know, who want this sort of thing? Look at me, I'm fat and I'm ugly. And
it's terrible what we can do to ourselves.
Yeah, it's you torment yourself, yeah. You know. So I decided, I went on this journey and, you know, Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Well, I was finding Nikki.
Title of the episode.
So... Do you know, and I actually felt a bit like Nemo, the ugly little fish swimming in this big ocean.
Just keep swimming.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm quite a good swimmer now. Very good at it, actually. So,
is that a euphemism?
this is not.
Yes, you're getting a little insight into our friendship.
So I started, you know, I started walking and I started the gym.
You were pounding loads.
Yeah. And I managed to get myself down. I managed to lose just over 10 stone.
Yeah, that what an achievement.
And then I did something really rash. And if I'm totally honest with people, it is something that in a lot of ways I regret. I decided to go for cosmetic surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I was still grieving.
100%.
But again, it was a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, part of my weight loss journey, Andy had always said to me, because I had three really, really big babies. So, and, you know, your elasticity in your skin is genetic. Some people's bellies go straight flat, others mine didn't. Mine just stayed there, plus all this other fat behind it. So I had what they called, rather unattractively, a large matron's apron. And Andy had always said to me, if I got to a weight,
an awful fucking thing.
But that's the medical terminology for
a
it.
Large.
No, it's called a matron's apron. If it overhangs, yeah, you know, if it's
shit, I have that now.
No, you don't. No. That's nothing. That is not overhanging. For those of you, it's a good job that the camera's up here and not down there.
I purposely won't let it go down past my boobs and say no.
But Andy had always said to me, we'll find the money. If you want a tummy tuck, we'll find the money. Yeah. So I had money put by. I'd been saving. And so I decided anyway to go for a tummy tuck. And this is the next part of finding Nikki, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of research and yes, I did go for cosmetic surgery here in Ireland.
Yeah.
Was that
because you felt like you'd heard horror stories of abroad?
Yeah.
I'd be the same.
And I did an awful lot of research. It wasn't just it was something that I'd wanted to do. So when I decided, yes, I'm going to go ahead with it, I did a lot of research. I didn't just...
You're an intelligent woman.
Yeah. I didn't
you
know, just go.
You've had a career. You don't just go. I pick you.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
No, I did an awful. I did an awful lot of research. And so I booked, and for legal reasons, I won't say where I went, but I went into this clinic. I had the tummy tuck, and a boob lift, which I'm very proud of. And yes,
I was going to go like that. But we know there's nothing to boot here, but I'm not going to lie, her nipple is winking at me.
Just like
I decide whether I leave Diane or not.
Just like I did at the gym the other night.
Sure did.
Yeah, it did. So
that's another story.
Yeah. So I went and I had the tummy tuck and
in Ireland.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it went wrong. Unfortunately, I got an infection. I wasn't taken seriously at the clinic. And I landed up having to have an emergency surgery by the same surgeon. And then 4 days later, I landed up in Vincent's with sepsis and kidney failure.
Jesus Christ.
Now,
sepsis, like that is, like you attach that with so many fatalities.
Yeah.
How long after the surgery did you end up with the sepsis and the...
They didn't. I went on it was exactly a month after the original surgery. I went on the Friday night and they completed, what happened was they completed the emergency debridement, okay, because I'd been sick through the night.
Yeah.
And they said I'd got cellulitis.
Oh, yeah.
So they did the debridement. You've seen the pictures, Clodagh. I had a horrific hole in my stomach. So they did the debridement. And
it's frightening.
It is frightening.
The pictures were frightening.
Yeah.
I still can't believe you endured that.
Yeah. And they did that on the Friday. I was in the clinic and I quote clinic, not hospital. It's a clinic. They came to me on the Sunday and said that they needed the bed for the surgeries on the Monday. And I didn't feel safe. This was in the outskirts of Dublin. I didn't feel safe coming home.
Of course.
So what I did, I paid for a hotel and went and stayed in the hotel so I could be near the clinic.
Oh, I obviously know this story, but when she told, even there now, it boils my blood. I remember when you told me that the first time.
Yeah.
I was seething.
Yeah.
For you. Where was the patient care? Like, this is your life.
Yeah.
It's not
they just brushed it off, Clodagh. It was like, oh, that's normal. It's normal for a wound breakdown. It's normal.
I've seen the pictures. The smell, that was not a normal.
Yeah. The smell that was infection. Coming off that was horrific.
Yeah.
So I booked into this hotel. So I was in the hotel Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Wow. At your own cost, of course.
At my own cost. Yeah. And to be honest, I have a really good friend, Ashley. Whose little boy at the time was only, well, he's a big boy now. He was only 11 or 12. Ashlyn's mom took Jack and Ash came and stayed with me in the hotel. On the Wednesday, she decided that she needed to come back down to Tipperary just to see Jack. So she came down to Tipperary and I started vomiting again Wednesday night. I rang Ash and she said she'd be up on the Thursday. I went back into the clinic Thursday, vomiting really badly. They kept me in a room for 4 days, I think. It's a bit of a blur, to be honest. I think it was for four. So I went in on the Thursday. It was for 4 days because, again, on the Sunday, they came in to me and the words still ring in my ears now. Now, bearing in mind, I was very sick at the time. And I wasn't myself because, to be honest, if I'd have been myself,
heads would have rolled.
Yeah, probably. More than heads.
I hear you.
And they came in and they said to me that they couldn't get me, I'm going to say this word wrong for any medics out there, but my kidney function, my creatinine levels were through the roof. So they should be sort of between 50 and 80. And mine were over 400.
Fuck off.
Yeah. And that I needed to go straight into a proper hospital. So
the clinic told you this?
Yes, I needed to go into a proper hospital. So I said, fine, okay. And they said, we've rang Vincent's and they're expecting you. I was like, right, okay. So I'm laying there waiting for the ambulance.
Yeah.
No ambulance arrived. I had to ring my friend who was already on her way. She was on her way up anyway.
From Tipperary.
To the outskirts of Dublin to collect me and take me to the A&E in Vincent's, where they hadn't heard of me.
No, didn't know you from Adam.
Didn't know me from Adam.
Had the clinic phoned ahead?
They said they had, but there was no record of a phone call. They'd given me my notes. That's a whole other issue.
So that's all you had?
That was. So I saw this really wonderful doctor called Nick. I didn't get his surname. And he was...
Nick, where are you at?
Where are you at, Nick?
Hit us up.
Yeah. he was horrified. He was like, he couldn't believe. Now, bearing in mind, this was the second surgery. Yeah. They took me in. I was in kidney failure. The sepsis had gone.
From a tummy tuck.
From a tummy tuck, yeah. They did an emergency biopsy on my kidney. And just my luck, they didn't get enough tissue, viable tissue, to say whether it was the drugs that I was taking, that they were pumping into me, that caused the damage, or it was the sepsis.
Okay.
So they started to reverse it anyway. I was on all sorts of concoctions.
You must have been pure.
Oh, that was great. It was great. The only time in my life I've taken drugs, I was like, hey.
I'm just happy to be here.
I was sending selfies to my friends to beat the band. And
you were, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. And you look like shit.
I was like, I thought I looked lovely.
Yeah. It's like me when I used to drink, I'd send these pictures. Yeah. And in my mind, I was Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. Selma Hayek.
Yeah.
And then I'd see it next day and go, oh my God. Yeah.
Sending selfies to everybody. So I was in the hospital for 10 days. Yeah. And
Vincent's looked after you.
Yeah, well they didn't. Like, they wanted to by day 10, Nikki was feeling like Nikki.
Okay.
My creatinine levels were coming down to a manageable level. They were about 130, 140.
And in terms of your wound?
My wound had broken down again because obviously it was quite bad and I'd got a pressure dressing on it.
Yeah.
But it hadn't broken down like before.
Okay.
So they came to me anyway. This was so funny. This doctor came, God love him. A kidney specialist, I can't remember his name, and if I did, I wouldn't say it anyway. Mm-hmm. The poor man came and he said to me, look, you've still got some, they called it kidney trauma, and the type of trauma that I had, most people land up with dialysis.
Oh, fuck.
So he said to me, you know, we really want to make sure we get on top of this. We want to put you on a course of steroids, and I can't remember the name of them now, to be honest, but they make you hallucinate and everything.
Okay.
So I said to him, taking those.
You knew of them?
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah. They give them to dogs and everything. And I said, come on, I'm not taking those. I said, they make you.
Well, if they're good enough for dogs.
I said, I'm not taking those. I've never been one to pump my body full of crap anyway.
You've always said that. Yeah, you kind of like the holistic.
And I said to him, no, I'm not taking those. I said, I live on my own. I said, what happens if I start hallucinating and stuff? You know, he said to me, oh, my God, Clodagh, I nearly died. I nearly punched him, actually. And I don't swear at people. But he said.
Me neither.
But he said to me, oh, we've looked into it and I understand there's a community hospital in the town where you live.
That's an assumption.
I just looked at him. I said,
come on, Granny. Follow me.
6 weeks. 6 weeks.
They no disrespect to that. Hey, you're looking after my uncle so well, but like, the dude's 80 with dementia.
I was like, I said, no way. I said, no chance. I said, do you know what? My creatinine levels are at 135. I said,
I would have came to visit you.
I went.
Smile.
Can you imagine me selfieing in the hospital? You've seen my selfies. Can you imagine that? You've seen
that. Like my nightdress.
These cost me $9,000. Do you like them?
Asking you and then beside you.
Can you imagine? Off my face on. What was it they wanted to put me on? Prednisone. That's what they wanted to put me on.
Prednisone.
Yeah.
We're not recommending any drug use. You know.
But anyway, basically, I told him to go off in short, jerky movements. And I did say to him,
that is such a polite way to say fuck off.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say it the polite way. I just told him. Yeah, no, I did say it the Irish way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and he was Australian as well.
Oh.
So I did sort of say to him, look, before I told him fuck off, I just said to him.
Yes, I knew I'd get it, of course. I just wait. We're about 49 minutes in. I knew I'd get a fuck over.
So I just said to him, listen, if I discharge myself from here and anything goes wrong, are you refusing to treat me? And he said, oh, no, we can't do that. I won't get me the paper then. I'm going home.
Right, okay.
I went home. I Googled it, of course, Dr. Google. Mm-hmm. There's a fly here. I Googled it on the way home and I took the holistic approach. And within 10 days, my creatinine levels were back down to normal.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so manuka honey, ginger tea.
Yeah. I have news.
Yeah. I was like,
wicker, wicker, wicker. Do you know what? I agree. I'm with it all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, the more we get on.
So, yeah, so that was that episode in finding Nikki.
Yeah.
So from then on, obviously, it took a little bit of time to heal.
Yeah.
And
but you were back. I remember you were back then walking and training and you were flying it.
I was, yeah. I was back walking, training, doing everything.
Back at the rescue. Yeah. You were cracking on, as Nikki does.
As Nikki does.
Yeah.
And again, still, you know, still hoping to find love out there and,
of course,
you know, just...
You felt ready that you could find...
I did, love, yeah. It was my granddaughter, actually. We decided that I needed to get back out on the dating scene. Now, whether we'll go into this we'll have a whole new episode about that because, definitely.
But this is something I did want to just mention, and I'm glad you did, because it's another thing that, like not taken from the absolute devastation of losing your husband, your best friend, your partner. You were how old when Andy died?
I was 57, nearly 58.
57 nowadays is like 37. And I think I can understand some people, it's their choice to not want to meet someone else or anything, but loneliness is a killer.
It is. I've never suffered with mental health or never thought I'd suffered with mental health.
And I'm enjoying this episode. It is obviously tough.
It is. But no, I went through some really tough times, and as much, you know, as wonderful as all my friends are, I'm a really tactile person, and
oh yeah, you are.
Just, and I don't care who you are, and there'll be people looking at this saying she's talking out of her arse. Every woman wants to be loved or wants somebody to love them. Everybody wants somebody to say, you look nice. I know I will never, ever, ever get what I had with Andy Vesey.
No.
But I want to be somebody special.
Why wouldn't you want
that? You're
not dead.
I'm not. And
you're living. You're breathing.
Do you know, I've got friends that are happily married in my age, and they're happily married, and I'm like, and they're like, sex. And I'm like, bring it on.
100%.
Bring it on. You know, and I'm not. I went through my menopause really early because I had hysterectomy many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not a dried up prune. I mean, I was in the desert for 15 years with Andy through drink. I ain't carrying on in that desert anymore. I'm changing direction.
And that's what I love about this. It's like, it's a new you. It's almost like a rebirth in a lot of ways. And it's like you're getting to, you've lived that life with Andy.
I did. You had
some amazing times, wonderful times. There was dark times. That's life. But now it's like Nikki's new life.
Yeah.
You know?
It's called finding Nikki.
I love that.
Yeah,
and you're so young and vivacious and full of life and personality and love and probably one of the most selfless souls I think I will ever meet in my life. So why wouldn't you want that? Because like you said, it's all your friends can say X, Y, and Z, but at the end of the day, they weren't the ones going home to a lonely bed. And you had that with Andy.
Do you know, some people are quite happy to live that life. And it's down to each individual.
And I respect them, but I couldn't go that.
Do you know, so I went back out on the dating scene, and yes, I did meet somebody. I've taken an awful lot of stick for it.
Really?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, small mentality.
Small town mentality.
Yeah, small town mentality, you know. 100%. And the person that I met is European. He's dark skinned Portuguese.
As are we.
You know, so he's a dark skin colour than I would be. And there were comments made about that.
I'm darker skinned than you.
I know.
And we're mates.
I know. But there were comments made about that. There was comments made because although there's not much that much of an age difference between us, he does look relatively young. There was comments made about that.
You're joking.
No, there was, yeah. And
said to you, do you mind me asking, said to your face? No. Or came back?
Came back.
Yeah. And do you know what?
I just think jealousy.
That's another episode as well.
But jealousy is an awful thing though, Clodagh.
But also people investing in other people's lives when it has fuck all to do with them is a pet peeve of mine. You know, I learned a valuable lesson lately, and Nikki knows it as well. People never stop surprising you, and all we can control is our reaction.
That's right.
We can't control their actions, and it's a hard pill to swallow when you want to go, and especially me, I shoot from the hip. You know, I wear my heart my sleeve.
Same as me. Yeah.
And I shoot from the hip, and a red mist can come down, but I have such come walk in my shoes before you even attempt to fucking comment on my life.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, but you know, I can put that, it hurt at the time, but I just think, I look at myself and I think, do you know what? It's jealousy.
100%.
I'm not Twiggy. Twiggy's a 1960s model from England. Perhaps I should have used somebody else. Who should I use?
Anyways, we don't notice the age gap.
Sorry, but I'm not a stick insect, and I'm not.
I don't. You know, Miss Piggy, when you say
Twiggy. No. She was a famous model in this.
Blonde hair.
Yeah. Very, very. So you know, I'm
Kate Moss. Let's go with Kate Moss.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not Kate Moss. I'm only 5'6" for a start, but if I was 5'10", I might look like Kate Moss. But, you know, I know I'm not Kate Moss, but I'm comfortable in my skin now.
I love that.
Especially last year, following on from the surgery, yeah. I'll just briefly run over what happened. As you know, Clodagh, my tummy was swelling.
Yeah.
And I was diagnosed with a tumour. Despite going back to said plastic surgeon several times to be told it was visceral fat, I was diagnosed with a huge tumour.
That's what they were saying, that was visceral fat.
Visceral fat, yeah.
They were ignoring.
Or organ fat, yeah. Yeah. So the tumour was diagnosed, and they were unsure of what organs it was attached to, where it was attached.
It was that big.
It was bigger than a watermelon. It was actually 33 centimetres in length. And when they got it out of me, it weighed 2.5 stone.
I have seen this. And
Bernie. You saw Bernie. Yeah.
Bernie is the name. I can't comprehend that something that ginormous was inside of you and dismissed.
Mm.
It was fucking frightening.
Well, again,
how did you react when that was taken out and you saw it? How coherent were you when they showed you?
Very coherent the next day. The next day.
Did they show you a picture or it?
No, the picture. I asked the surgeon to take a picture. They were actually taking, it was from the day of diagnosis, I was diagnosed with it in the May. And I was in the Mater Hospital in September to see the consultant. I actually met a consultant from Limerick, but they couldn't do it in UHL because they mind to, because of the previous surgery.
Yeah.
They needed to open me up again, straight down. And because of the complications, they said they might need a plastics team.
So that's why.
So then they referred me up to the Mater. I met the main surgeon there on the beginning of September.
This is 12 months ago, by the way, guys. Only 12 months ago.
So,
and I keep that in mind when I'm talking to you in a little bit.
So this is, this was last September. So I met him and he sort of drew a diagram of this huge, I knew what it would look like anyway, because Nikki being Nikki had looked at all the scans.
I'm surprised you don't have a fucking doctorate.
I'd got all the CDs from the scans, and
So did you know between May and September the size of what was inside you?
Yeah.
Fuck. How did that? How did?
Yeah,
that
I did.
Were you scared?
I was very scared. Do you know what I was scared of more than anything? I wasn't scared. I'd made peace with the fact that if it was the dreaded sea,
yeah,
that I would have to travel that road. I'd made peace with that fact.
Because it turned out to be benign.
It turned out to be benign,
yeah. God.
Yeah. But I made peace with the fact that I said, look, if it is cancer, then I've got to go down that road. I'd made peace within myself that that's the road I would travel. My biggest fear was the fact that even though they'd had the CT, they'd had the MRI and the CT scan, they didn't really know what organs it was stuck to or what it was.
Yeah.
So my biggest fear was dying on the operating table.
Going in for surgery.
That was my biggest fear. And I was last down was it 6th of October? I think it was. It was a Friday. So I was in the matter all day on my own.
Were they good to you in there?
Amazing. You get a bespoke, because they treat it as cancer, obviously, until they know you're under the gynae team.
Yeah.
You get a bespoke nurse. There's a team of nurses there that are on call 24/7. Even the run up to the surgery, anything, you can email them, ring them, anything.
That's incredible.
It was amazing. They took me down on the Friday. And I remember just lying there and this little nurse saying to me, I was crying. And she said to me, why are you crying? And I said, I don't want to die.
Oh, God, Lord, yeah.
And they wheel you then into this room off the theatre, I suppose it is. It's all very high tech now.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
It's like something off Star Trek.
It is, yeah. It's all very high tech.
Yeah.
And they'd persuaded me to have an epidural for pain afterwards, which in hindsight I really shouldn't have had because, again,
the back.
My medical history, my inner workings are shy. I'm allergic to so many things.
Here, girl, I'm barren and every bit of me is.
So
I get you.
They'd persuaded me to have this epidural, which I really didn't want, but anyway, I had it. And I remember the surgeon that actually did, Tom, the surgeon that actually did the surgery, he came in and he said to me, are we ready to go, kid? And I said to him,
I love that. Yeah. I even love that.
He came in and he said, are we ready to go, kid? Are you feeling all right? And I said, Tom, I am, yeah. I said, do me a favor, will you? And he said, what? I said, we take a picture. And he said, what? I said, we take a photo of it. I want to see Bernie, because it was Bernie the bum. I said, I want to see what Bernie looks like when he comes out. And he said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he said to me, are you okay? And I said,
did you really want to see it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'd seen it on pictures, so I wanted to see the real life version of it, you know. So
you're a fucking weirdo.
I don't know. So I just...
Did you express your worries to him that you're afraid of dying?
I just said to him, please don't let me die, Tom. And he looked at me and he said, you're not going to die. He said, that doesn't happen on my watch. Oh. So... they did the surgery. I think it was about 10 o'clock at night. I remember coming round.
Oh, go away.
I was in recovery, obviously, and yeah. I can remember coming round. And then I was...
You would have been on massive amounts of pain.
I actually wasn't because of my kidneys. No. I was on... Whoa! Morphine. Oh, my God.
I experienced it last year for the first time.
Oh, my God.
It's good shit.
It is, yeah. I did have a little complication, not anything to do initially with the surgery. My lungs filled up with fluid, and that's the length of the surgery. When they're incubating you, they don't pump your lungs up fully.
Okay.
So the bottom of my lungs actually collapsed and they filled with fluid. So for about 4 days, I had to sleep sitting up in a chair because when I lay down, I felt like I was drowning. Great way to stop smoking, folks. I've not touched a cigarette since.
Yeah, and well done you on that, by the way.
Yeah,
well,
so I'd cut down no end, but,
yeah, but that
wasn't the smoking that caused it, but it didn't help.
Of course, yeah.
So that was that. By the Wednesday, I was back home on the couch with 200 staples, a lovely zip running from between my boobs to halfway down me, VV. it's great, yeah. and again, slight complications with the healing.
The wounds, was it?
Yeah, exactly the same place as before. Yeah. And it was because of the compromised tissue from the cosmetic
surgery. And this was only, what, 2 years prior?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it's so fresh. Your skin is sick.
But look, I'm here to tell the tale.
Thank God.
They had to do a little bit of an opening up, and I wore a again, a pressure dressing with a bag. And it took a little bit of time to heal. But I'm here to tell the tale, you know. And we move forward now to September. Here we are, 12 months later. I'm, as you know, I'm back swimming. I'm back in the gym with you. We're kickboxing.
Boxing, yeah, core, weightlifting.
Yeah, and I'm absolutely, I think, I look at myself now, and lads, I don't mind telling everybody, like I'm 62 in a few weeks' time. I feel 22.
And you look it.
I feel amazing. Yeah, I act it. Yeah, so my journey is not over.
No.
By a long shot, my journey's not over. There's still lots more. There's still a good bit of me to find. I'm not, will I ever be wholly content? I don't know. I don't know if I'm that sort of person.
I don't know if many people are, though, Nikki. I think in reality, are they?
I'd like to get to a stage where I'm with the one person. I want to travel.
Yeah.
And I love my holidays, as you know.
Yeah, of course. Because in fairness, you work harder than any other woman I know.
Well, I work. I do it out of love, Claudia. It's not a paid job. You know that.
100%. What she does with the rescue, guys, I'll be putting up the links to her rescue as well anyway to follow Macara Animal Rescue. They only had an open day there on Sunday that we got to attend. And guys, those little lads, those little babies, I don't know what they do without you guys. I don't know. You're literally a godsend to them.
But they've been a godsend to me, Clodagh. What I'll say is, since Andy dying, if I hadn't had the rescue and that to concentrate on, because, as you know, I'm retired from work, so the rescue is something I set up many moons ago.
And she says retired. She probably works more than she ever did.
Yeah, I probably do. But it's that's kept me going as well, you know.
Yeah, I get that. You've a reason to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
You've purpose, you've intent.
Yeah. And do you know, I look back now and the way I deal, there's not a day goes by that I don't think of Andy Veazey. Not a day.
How could you?
It's the memories in the phone, there's things in the house. So for anybody out there that is quick to judge, whether it be a widow or a widower that's moved on, think twice, because those people inside are broken. They, as I said to you earlier, everybody wants or needs something in their lives. And I think it's awfully cruel for people to judge, because life does move on. Life does move on. And it doesn't mean to say that I've forgotten Andy.
No, or that you haven't stopped grieving.
And that I love him any less. Yeah. I mean, there are days when things go wrong for me and I talk to him and I say, why the fuck did you have to go and leave me?
Yeah.
Do you know, there are days that I do that. But he's not, the reality is he's not coming back.
Yeah.
I'm left with his memories and I'm left with having to find myself. And I'm a good way down that journey. And I'd like to think that maybe, you know, in the next, there's still little hurdles to overcome. Some decisions I've made might not be the right decision for me, because life's about making mistakes as well.
Every single thing you have done has led you to where you are right now with your arse on that seat, just like my arse is on this
seat. So
rightly or wrongly, what we've done, you know.
But I just, life is about, and I will make more mistakes. I'm not infallible, 100%. You know,
But do you not find there's something freeing in that? That you can say, I'm still going to stay making mistakes, lads.
Oh, well, because
I can promise you I learn from them.
But that's life and you learn from them. My mum used to say to me and my dad, we come from really a working class family. Things that stick in my mind when we were growing up, there's no such word as can't. No such word as that. You choose, you can try and do something. You choose to say, I can't do it. Because if you persevere enough, you will do that.
Yeah.
You know? And another thing that they used to say was, anybody can stoop down and pick up nothing. So basically, when you're at your lowest, you can either stay down there and then try and get up and have nothing in your hands, or you can go down there and come back up with the knowledge or the tools or some way of improving yourself or moving forward, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, we had a tough upbringing as kids, but you know what, lads? I look at today's society and I'm so thankful that I had that tough upbringing.
Me too.
So thankful.
Me too. And like, there is a 20-year gap with us, but I adore my mum and my dad to bits, but I was brought up by your Catholic Irish country mother, and by fuck, you won't meet anyone stricter than them.
Well, like my mum,
and I'm so grateful for that.
My mum's the same. I mean, do you know, I got pregnant in the early 80s with my daughter Kelly. And I was 6 weeks off having her before I told anybody I was pregnant.
Why?
Because I was afraid. I was ashamed. I was frightened.
That just bothers me so much. But
that was then, yeah. You know. And I remember my mum sitting down, bearing in mind my mum was Catholic, sitting down and saying to me then, like, my mum had high hopes for me. You know, I was the golden child.
Okay.
I was extremely clever in school. Yeah. I actually went on to do a degree with three children.
Didn't
yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, do you know, my life, my one ambition, I always wanted to become a policewoman.
I could so see you being a policewoman.
So what I did, when it comes to Ireland, I become a traffic warden. And you'd get the uniform one way or another.
She was getting a uniform.
Yeah, yeah, well, I was getting the uniform
you're
one way.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the weekend.
But yeah, so you know, life's a massive learning curve. None of us are finished. And so you and I could talk for hours and hours and hours about many, many subjects. I mean, you know me, I'm an open book. And
I think that's why you and I get on so well as well. We both wear our hearts on our sleeve. We acknowledge our faults. We're unapologetically authentic. And one of the most freeing things for me was to actually not announce it to the world, because it's not like anyone actually gives a fuck, like, but it's for me to be able to be comfortably imperfectly perfect, if you know what I mean, that I can just say, this is me, lads. I have a mouth like a trucker. I suffer severe with anxiety. I always worry. I'm terrified to the bones of death, in particular losing anyone I love. So to have someone like you come on and tell me this, and I'm looking at you, and I'm looking at you not only coping, but you're actually thriving now in spite of all that fucking tough shit you've been through. And that's only probably quarter of a chapter of some of the things you've been through in your life.
It is. I mean, like, I've been fortunate. I've had an amazing life. And, you know, it's not over yet, but I sound like I'm writing my epitaph here.
Inside and half the assumption.
And it's not over I've had an amazing time. I've always been outgoing. Yeah. I've done outrageous things. I've lived life to the full.
I love that, though.
And I want to continue living life to the full, you know. And it's about, I wrote a few words back in 2021. Yeah. And it's something, I love poetry. It's something, I've got lots of talents that people, I keep hidden. You know, I'm very artistic.
You can sing as well.
You know, I like to sing, yeah. I love to paint.
Yeah.
And I love to write poetry. And I've always written poetry. In fact, I wrote many moons ago, sort of like a poem, I suppose, if you like. And my daughter stole it for her exam, her English exam, and got full honours.
Fuck off.
I didn't find that out till later on. Yeah, it was some project she'd got to do, and she stole my poetry book and took some of my work.
Well, I admire that so much, because I don't have, I probably do, but I have never committed to it. My creativity in terms of writing and that, it's just not there. So I'm always in awe of, and in particular what you're going to read out, because I've thankfully had the pleasure of hearing this before, but you're reaching down and you're pulling something out of your soul.
But I think it's something that would be good for you, as with your anxiety and with the things that you do. Sometimes, you know, often It's to sit, just to have a book at the side of your bed and sometimes writing things down.
Well, you see, I don't know if the last episode of the podcast, I made a public service announcement, but I haven't actually just posted it on social media. I am going to write a book.
Good woman.
Yeah. And I'm going to do, it's not going to be a fucking a guide to or a how to or, a help, self-help book or anything. It's just simply going to be my tale.
Something I've always loved to, I've always aspired to do, because I have so many hilarious stories. And I mean, we'll have to share a drink one night, Chloe, and I was going to call my book Living on an Acre. Right. Because from the day that Andy and I met and we moved to Ireland sort of like 18 months later.
Yeah.
There are so many, you know me and animals, there are so many hilarious things. There are some sad things, but there's some really hilarious things that have happened. Yeah. And it's just the time for me to commit. It may be something that I do when I'm in the hospital Assumption when I'm 80.
Yeah, and sure, you know. I'm coming in to visit you. Yeah. I'll type it because your poor little hands won't be able to.
But anyway, this is something I wrote, and bearing in mind,
thank
Andy.
Thank you for sharing this with us.
Yeah, it's no problem. This is something I wrote in early 21. So, she is there somewhere deep inside me, yearning for release. Slowly, she is emerging, locked within my soul for many years. She has been many things in her life. A giver, a carer, a wife, a lover, and is still a mother. I ask her, how long is it? Sorry. I ask her, how long is it? How long since you've been you? Now is her time to shine. Time to let go and release the ethereal woman who has given so much to others. Time to take her destiny back, to shape and mould her whole being. Time is infinite. A lifetime is short. Now is the time to release her, to challenge her, look after her, shape and create her destiny. Be happy. Make choices for her. Love her and release her. Now is my time.
That's spectacular.
It's so, yeah.
Spectacular. And what I loved about that the day you read it first is how you're talking about yourself as her.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, yeah, it's like you're looking into future you.
Yeah. It's about finding me, yeah. Finding her, yeah. Not finding an old Nikki, but finding a new Nikki.
A new Nikki,
a new Nikki with some of the old traits.
Yeah,
you
with,
know?
A twist, Nikki, yeah. With a twist.
Yeah, a 62-year-old Nikki, if, yeah, you like.
Nikki 2.0.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. You know, not Nikki.
How long was Andy dead? You might be asking when you wrote that.
Probably September, October, November, December, January. 5-6 months.
Did you find writing helped?
Writing helps me a lot, yeah. I got a few bits that did you ever read the story I wrote, the Christmas story for the rescue? Did you ever read that?
That's about 5-6 years old, is it?
Yeah, it's about the first ever, the miracle of the first adoption.
Yeah,
I wrote
did
that.
Did you write that?
I did, yeah. The plan was to turn that into a Christmas book. But I never found anybody to illustrate it. So, guys, if there's anybody out there, I do have a wonderful Christmas short story.
Oh, my gosh, you have to get that illustrated.
Yeah.
You have to.
I do have a wonderful, wonderful little Christmas story that I wrote.
A shout out on the Instagram. It sounds like I'm in the hospital. Still getting some shout outs.
Lads, you do amazing work. We'll see you soon. I wrote that. Yeah. And I get
that.
Great. Yeah, I wrote that. Yeah, yeah.
You're a gifted bitch.
I just, like, words come easy to me. Like, obviously. You know, and to put them down, that's why I think you'd be a great at writing.
Yeah, that's what, again, thinking. And it's not that, and it's funny, like, again, saying that, like, you, what you're saying about other people, you know, their opinion of you moving on or whatever. And I'm like, people's opinion of me, who the fuck does she think she is writing a book? It's not even about, I feel it would be amazing for me an amazing help for me in my healing with some of the things I've went through in my life that, like, people think they know me via Instagram and via Facebook.
But they don't.
They don't have a fucking clue.
Yeah, yeah.
You obviously know a lot of my history and a lot of the trauma I've been through, and vice versa. And it's, if I knew that, the way I look at it is, and I think you will get this as well, maybe with your writings, I often think if 13-year-old Clodagh had a 42-year-old Clodagh to talk to, a lot of things mightn't have happened. And I'm not saying that I, you know, it's not that I've reached this point of absolute self-awareness and that I've figured it all out. By fuck, I haven't. Again, this week I learned a valuable lesson.
Yeah.
But I just think if that book was able to be handed to someone young or someone struggling, that they say, yeah, I'm not alone.
Yeah, I think, do you know, anxiety, there's lots of things, I sound like a real old fart now, but there's lots of things that are discussed and talked about in today's society that many, many moons ago were not discussed and not brought out into the open. And as you know, Clodagh, I have a son that's special needs.
Yeah.
He was never diagnosed until he was in his mid to late 20s. Yeah. He's a paranoid schizophrenic, you know, and like I'd openly talk about, I went through turmoil when it was, imagine. You know, oh my God, because when he was growing up, he was a naughty child.
Of course.
But yeah. You know, now I know that there was, so that none of this was ever discussed, even into the 80s and the 90s.
My sister was the same, you know, and now I know it's a different diagnosis.
And you know, and I think it's great that people, I do think, and again, there's probably going to be people that out there that are going to shoot me, but I do think with some of the things, there's a certain element that young people latch onto and you use in the wrong way.
100%.
If you get what I'm saying.
I do.
You know.
100%.
They use it, and a particular member of my family would use her mental health as an excuse to do the wrong things that she does.
Look, I got called out on Facebook or Instagram or whatever a couple of months ago, but one thing I will always be is authentic, and I will always speak my truth. Over somebody while under the influence attacking minorities.
Yeah.
That included people with learning difficulties, special needs and mental health, as well as colored people and members of the traveling community. El Paco came on my podcast because of that. John Connor's the actor's brother. I called out that I got attacked by people that were like, I call myself a mental health advocate, and here I am attacking somebody who's clearly struggling with addiction. And I will stand firm on this and mental health issues. Addiction or mental health does not give you a pass to be
no,
a fucking asshole.
No.
Or attack people.
No, and it doesn't. And I have a member of my family who is now in her 30s, my close family, who is now in her 30s, who does that. She and it's quite evident to everybody that it does not give
that's
you.
That's manipulation.
It is.
And it shows
is.
They're actually more clever than the
it is,
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And it doesn't, like, it's great to talk about these things and to build awareness. And, you know.
They still can be seen as taboo, can't they?
They can. They can, yeah. You know, I mean, what we're talking about now, people are saying you shouldn't be judging people like that.
I wonder, you know, it's not judgment, it's a fact.
I'm speaking from experience. Personal experience. Same. Of a family member utilizing her mental illness or so-called mental illness to manipulate other people and do things that are not
right.
At
the end of the day, there's right, there's wrong. And if you have full charge of your faculties, as in your full mental faculties, whether you've depression, anxiety, bipolar, whatever it is, that is not an excuse
to do
disgusting, unimaginable things.
No, it isn't.
And in particular, at that time, I mean, that was disgraceful because a lot of young people were following that and were thinking that it's okay to use the slurs that were used. And yeah, that people might say I'm opinionated or I'm a bit controversial. But if I'm being called controversial for calling wrong out and speaking my mind and bringing light to topics that people need to hear, that need to help, that will help them heal, I'll gladly be called controversial till the day I die. I will wear that as a badge of honour.
Chloe, I agree with you. And so, like, my journey from losing Andy, you know, like I say, there are people that have judged me, you know, walk in my shoes.
I always say it.
And if you want to be me, walk in my shoes.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knows what goes on in my heart or in my head.
No, nobody. You know?
And it doesn't give anybody, I'd like to think I'm not a judgmental person. You know, I've got lots of opinions on lots of things. I'm like you.
Yeah.
I've always been, I've always been fairly vocal.
Oh, yeah.
Is the polite way of putting it.
Yeah.
We do. You know, and I'm not afraid to say how I feel.
Same. What could be wrong with that? I think the world needs more of that. Rather than being the, you know, say something to you and then I'll go and talk about you in a completely different context. But, fuck off.
But, you know, like the age gap's a massive thing as well. Look, between me and, like, nowadays it's more acceptable to talk about things like anxiety, depression. When I was growing up, you know, even the sort of conversations you'd have with Kira about sex and stuff like that. I mean, God, if people heard the conversations that me and you were having downstairs with your husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'd be like,
Jesus.
You know.
But also people can manipulate those things.
They can.
Those conversations as well.
Oh, they can.
Be a privy to them and part of them and then use them against you.
They can. We know that, Chloe.
Yeah.
We know that.
And that
is
something that I'm not okay with.
But that for you is down the line, maybe. Do you know what would probably be great is to set up a third mic and get Mac in here with us as well.
Yeah.
And have the three-way because the three of us, like Kira's done loads of travelling. She's a totally, I'm the older, more mature.
Yeah,
more
but sensible. We've all walked
different paths.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and. But,
yeah, no, I'm not okay with manipulation. No. I'm not okay with people being deceitful. Again, I can be quite judgmental, but I've learned from my journey to be a bit more sounder and understand people's situations and not judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, that's.
I will judge you on your character 100% because if your character, if you present to me like there's someone that I know recently that I would have considered possibly one of the most beautiful people I've seen lately. And an action they did instantly made them to me the ugliest person I've met.
But so, you see, we've had this conversation recently, Chloe. Yeah. It's like, you know, I don't. People will say, "Oh, you don't want to talk to that one. She's this. She's that." I make my own judgments on people.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I go along.
It can sting. Yeah.
It can. It can.
People can say, "Be careful."
But
and like,
I think
I make my own judgment.
But I think until you make that judgment, you know, you can hold your hands up there and then go, "Do you know what? You were right."
Yeah.
Or you can say,
"Yeah."
Well. You know, it, in fact...
Yeah, because it's nice to give the benefit of the
doubt. I think everybody deserves the benefit of the doubt.
I kind of agree with you there. To be
they
honest.
Do.
Yeah, I
do. You know, and everybody deserves a chance. You know, you shouldn't judge
see
people...
It through your own eyes.
Yeah, you shouldn't judge people. Like, I have a very close member of my family who many, many years ago was a drug addict.
Yeah.
A very serious drug addict.
Yeah.
She went into rehab.
Mm.
And now... At the time, people, she's very clever at school, but at the time, she's a waster. They'll find her dead in a ditch somewhere, you know. She went into rehab. She sorted herself out. Now, this lady, I'll be honest, and I'm proud to call her my sister, is my next sister down. She's now 62. She's 60 years old, actually. I'm 62. She's 60 years old. She has an amazing, amazing career in mental health.
Wow.
And it's to do with addiction. And that is because she went down that road.
Yeah.
You know, people wrote her off. People wrote her off in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I was as guilty of it. I used to think, oh, God, you know, I mean, she was my sister. And I used to think, I've never done any of that sort of
thing. Sometimes you can be harsher on members of your own family as well.
So, you know, I just, everybody deserves a second chance.
Yeah, and you learned from that. You know what I mean? She learned from that. That's why I was saying we will keep making mistakes, but every mistake brings us to where we are. And if we can learn from it, that's the key takeaway.
Yeah, the key thing is not to make the same mistake twice.
What do they say? The definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
So I would find that with certain people, certain situations that you
just... That sounds like my love life at the moment, by the way.
Do you like it?
Do I like my love life at the moment? Well, I don't know about the mistakes I keep making, but, you know, I will get there.
She's good.
So I must be definitely heading towards insanity or something.
Not at all. Not at all. Oh, my God. I swear to God. I honestly think this is going to be probably one of the most watched episodes so far of this season.
Well, I don't know. I hope people, you know, we've talked about many, many topics.
We've got a lot in there.
We have, yeah.
On a serious note, genuinely, like, we're friends. But apart from that, thank you so much for trusting me to share some of the hardships you've been through, and in particular, the loss of Andy, because that's not an easy story to tell,
no matter
how many years or how many, you know, and, you know, seeing you getting upset there, like,
I'll always
get upset.
I can
see the pain. Of course you will.
Always.
We often talk, you know, myself and Nikki, we train together. We, you know, we meet up a lot, and I've often seen you come into tears. But there's a difference, me and you chatting, but now I'm sharing you with my podcast and my hope more than one viewer.
Well, let's, guys.
So I do trust you on that.
All I'll say is, if there's anybody out there that's been through or is going through the scenario that I've been through with the loss of a loved one, there's no right or wrong way to grieve. You grieve in your own manner.
You do you.
And, you know, there is help out there if you choose to take it. I didn't. My friends were my guiding light. And my daughter was just amazing.
Yeah.
I'm blessed. So blessed.
Well, she didn't lick it off a stone
to have a daughter like Kelly.
Yeah,
so blessed.
Off a stone, you as her mum, what else could she be?
But we've always been, again, Kelly's as authentic as me. We've always been open and honest about. And it was, she's brought that down to my granddaughter as well, May. It was May that, in fact, before we finish, I have to tell you this. When I decide, well, sort of, it was decided for me that I needed to get back out on the dating scene. So I've got my then 19-year-old granddaughter on the phone saying to me, Mama, which is what she calls me, you really need to try some internet dating because you know that's where I met Joe. So I said, right, okay, so how do I do that then? And she says, well, probably Tinder is your best one. And I was like, right, okay. She goes, now, Mama, I'm going to send you a message because I don't want you going onto the wrong platform. And I was like, right, fine, okay. So she sent me this message and I opened it up and it said, Dear Mama, please make sure you type in Tinder, T-I-N-D-E-R. Do not go on to Grindr. I had to ring her back. I said,
didn't ask her what Grindr is. I know that.
To ring her back.
To be fair, I think you would have copped pretty well.
But, you know, and I'm proud of, like, my girls are my world.
Yeah.
That, you know, and, you know, with the little one now as well.
Yeah, of course,
my girls. I've two boys, but I'm not so close to those, but my girls are my world, and the just the whole relationship that we have with
it's
Kelly and May, it is something
special.
It is something special, you know. They do anything for me and I do anything for them,
to
and
be
that
fair,
is
it's easy love you.
Nothing.
I have to say, and I'm not even blood related. Do you know what I mean? It's easy love, this chick. It is. No. It's very easy love you. I'm very, very, very thankful. I'm very blessed that you've been on the scene there 20 years in and out and on. And but I think now, as older women, and me as an older woman now, I appreciate and value your advice and the authenticity of our friendship. Our values are very similar.
I think they are. And I think even though I'm old enough to be your mom, it's our personalities are, yeah, our values and our personalities are very similar fierce. As well.
Yeah,
you know?
Fierce, yeah.
And
I don't think age will ever have anything to do with connections like that.
No, I don't think so. No. I think age is friendship, true friendships and people that you connect with, age is nothing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Whether I have another really good close friend that's in their 50s and another one who's 60. So,
yeah.
And then another friend who's only 30. Bitch.
Yeah. And you know, it's whether it's friendships, relationships, yeah. And again, you know, people tend to be judgmental. So whether it's friendships or relationships, there can be connections across. I mean, lads, seriously, if you see me walking down the street with an 18-year-old, slap me. But
no, you won't. I'd pull up. And
go, yeah. That won't happen. But you know, and I just people need to stop being so judgmental.
100% and nasty. And
yeah,
and realize that your words punch, your actions have consequences and they can impact people's lives. And that's not okay. So I was just like, just be sound.
Yeah.
I keep saying it, just be sound.
You know,
stay in your own lane, look after yourself and your loved ones.
The truth of it is, Clodagh, as I said there, you know, time is infinite, life's not. We only get one shot at this.
Yeah.
And
all I'm thinking of is Eminem now. You only get one shot. Do not miss a chance to blow this opportunity.
But there you go.
Lifetime.
It's yeah. True.
We have to cut that out. Irish people shouldn't rap. I have to cut
that out. No, you don't, because it's true.
We only get one shot. You only get one shot.
You know, it's
and
not
you
life.
Look back at the things you didn't do. Regret. What is that?
No,
saying?
I don't. I never want to sit there. You should never look back and
regret the things you regret.
No, regret the things you didn't do. You shouldn't look. You should never look back and go, I wish I'd done this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I had a good friend many years ago, Jane, and she used to say, "Do you know what? It's not a dress rehearsal. You're only here once. Make the most of it." And Jane was a party animal.
And you can say that flippantly, but I think sometimes it doesn't stick in here in your core, where it's like. Literally.
Not till you get older.
Yeah.
Not till you get, do you know when you're saying those things?
I do. My the anxieties that I would have now would be around health and my loved ones being healthy. That's where I would be. That would never have been on my radar. But again, that comes with age. But again, control the controllable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, sometimes you have to just let go and go, right, yeah, I'm on the roller coaster. Woo! Put up the hands.
Like, and do you know what? Enjoy the ride, lads, because none of us know what's around the corner.
She means that in a few ways, I think.
No, I do not.
But she's confirmed.
None of us know what's around the corner. No. None of us. I mean, I've got to get down that Styra tonight.
I know. I'm really looking forward to getting you down that Styra.
But, you know.
Can't even grab your legs. Yes.
Kind of held my hand going up. He was laughing as I was coming up. I was on all fours.
With my husband.
But yeah.
Nikki, thank you.
No, thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
It's a crack.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing about it. It's laughs, it's tears, it's true life.
Yeah.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah, and that's I've listened to every single one of the podcasts.
Thank you.
But I must say, the general consensus, I'll listen back to myself, but I still, Mac, Kira is that one. Just, I used to listen to it out in the garden. Yeah. I'd be laughing. I can still laugh at it now.
Do you know what? And I remember when we did that. It was like, again, I was totally trying to get into the mood of it. But what we did was, would you believe, we recorded that in the bedroom, my bedroom in my mum's house. And we both sat on pillows on the floor at the foot of my bed. And put on the two headphones and just totally, it was like we didn't even realize we were recording.
Yeah.
And it was like we went back into our childhood and it was very freeing to do that.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when we get together. Like that, friendships like that, you can't, it just comes naturally. You can't fake it, can't you? No.
And the beauty of that is, like, I listened to that podcast and I listened to some of the things you were talking about. And
like when she tried to pimp me out for 20p at 13 years of age. She made a fucking bomb off
me. It's so funny, you shifting lads at that age. And I'm like that. I was like, 13 years of age, I was still playing with my dolls.
I was playing with my dolls too, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, right.
The
blow up ones.
Excuse me now. I have HR up on you now before you know. I feel very uncomfortable with that comment. Give me my fucking arms, please. Oh my God. Well, look, on that note, guys, this has been another incredible episode. Actually, it's been a pure joy. I mean, it's been an hour and 39 minutes. I feel like we've been only talking 10 minutes.
I know, we could talk all night.
People like you, like, it just comes easy and natural. So massive thanks again to Nikki for coming on.
Great. For the enjoyed every
and
minute.
Tears for every bit of it. And guys, I will sign off with my usual, please, if you're enjoying the podcast, make sure to follow it on YouTube, on Spotify, on Instagram. And you can also get in touch at nothingtobowithyou@gmail.com. And please make sure and leave your reviews. If you're liking the show, let us know what you're enjoying about it. If you have ideas for the show, if you can think of someone that you think would be a good fit for the show. There's a couple of really, really exciting more guests coming up before this season finishes. And my final guest of this season is a little bit well known, and I'm not diminishing any of my guests
Excuse
that I've had, but
me.
I've managed to wrangle a pretty well known one, so I'm very excited about that. And we'll be finishing up probably within the next maybe 6 weeks, season two. And look, as you know, I'm an absolute fucking disaster with technology, but each episode I'm getting more and more to grips so that I can edit now. You can see me and my ugly mug, so we're doing great. So look, we'll leave it at that, lads, and go enjoy yourselves, be good, be safe, and just be fucking sound. Mind yourselves. Take care.